Good afternoon, everybody. I'll be talking about Borg, which is a system that does block reorganization based on observed I/O patterns to improve the performance. This is joint work with members from my lab, Jorge Guerra and Luis Useche, Sam Bernard from Georgia Tech, Jason from Syracuse University, and our advisors, Dr. Raju Rangaswamy and Dr. Vagelis, yesterday. So what is the problem that we're trying to address here? As we know that when we access a file or an application, the seek or rotational latencies are incurred from the disk drive. This is because existing implementations of the file system tend to store data sequentially on the disk drive, but accesses to this are not necessarily sequential. For instance, in a big file, you can have accesses to fragments of a file, which are non-sequential. This results in a mismatch between the way the data is laid out on the disk drive and the way the data has been accessed on the disk drive. And this results in a degradation of performance. So what can we do about this? Well, we can co-locate the fragments of data together, which can reduce the seek latencies. And if possible, we can store them sequentially on the disk drive that can reduce the rotational latencies. So Borg is based on this principle. But how much scope of improvement is there with this kind of changes in the block organization? So we observed, we investigated some workloads. These are the workloads that we looked at. We studied their characteristics to find out how much scope of improvement there is. We looked at four different kinds of workloads. The first two, the office and the developer workloads, are single user workloads. The office workloads contained applications used by a common office tasks and GNU plot and so on, emails and browsers. The developer workload contained tasks which were used in the development environment, that is the Make and GCC and GDB and so on. The next two workloads were multi-user workloads. The subversion workload contained the sources and the document repositories for our research lab. And finally, the web server was the department web server workload for our computer science department. This table summarizes the different important characteristics of the workloads. The first column shows the type of the workload. The second column shows the total file system size used in the workload. The next two columns shows the reads and the writes that were used by the workload. This indicates the total reads and the writes that were used by the workload. So the first characteristics we observed is the non-uniform access frequency distribution, which means that the frequently accessed data on the disk drive is actually just a small portion of the entire data that is stored on the disk drive. And this data is not co-located together. It is spread over all different locations in the disk drive. So this table, again, shows the first two columns are the same from the previous table. The third column here shows the unique reads, and the fourth column shows the unique writes that were made to the file system. As we can see, the unique reads and the writes in a week-long trace were made are really a small portion of the entire file system data. Also, the last column here shows the most popular block accesses of these accesses, and we can see that the number of most frequently accessed data is substantially high in the small portion of data that is accessed all over the disk drive. Also, this figure here shows the heat map. Each cell here represents different disk regions. This is for the web server workload only. The different shades indicate the frequency of accesses in the different regions. The darker shades indicate more accesses to those regions. So as you can see, the accesses are spread throughout the disk. They are not co-located together on the disk drive. So with these results, we can conclude that if we co-locate data, there is still an opportunity of improvement in the disk drive performance. The next characteristic we observed was partial determinism, which means non-sequential block accesses also repeat in a certain workload. This table here shows the partial determinism for different workloads. It was calculated by measuring the non-sequential block accesses which were greater than one. If the number of non-sequential block accesses were greater than one for the week-long traces for all of these workloads. And as we can see here again, they're substantially higher. So with this, we can again conclude that if we have information about partial determinism, we can somehow use this to increase the sequentiality and thereby improve the performance in the workloads. And finally, we notice temporal locality in the workload. That is, there's substantial overlap across different days in the workload. This figure here shows the changes in the The figure shows the changes in the working set size. Again, this is only for the web server experiment. The different columns show the overlap with the first day, overlap of data accesses with the first day in the workload. And as you can see, the overlap is substantially higher. The dark columns indicate the overlap for the top 20% accesses, that is the most frequent accesses, and that too is substantially higher. We observed a similar trend across the different workloads, but I just present the web server workload here. So with this, we can safely say that if we have information about past I/O activity, we can use this to reorganize data and improve the performance. So with these characteristics, Borg is motivated using these characteristics. Borg identifies the block access patterns inside the workloads. It identifies the hot block access pattern inside the workload. It copies these block access patterns onto a separate dedicated partition on the disk drive and places them sequentially relative to their access patterns on the disk drive. This separate partition is called the BOPT, or the Borg optimized partition. It is the size of this partition can be changed. It can be reconfigured by the administrator. It also contains room for write buffers. So any new write requests that come into the system can also be written inside this BOPT partition. So by restricting the movement to the small partition, by restricting the head movement to this small partition, we reduce the seek latencies. Also, Borg operates in the background, so there's minimal interference to the foreground workload. It is implemented as a module in the block layer, and it can be seamlessly inserted or removed as and when required. It is independent of the file system because it is implemented at the block layer. And finally, it maintains consistency by maintaining a persistent indirection map, which contains the mapping between the blocks in the file system, in their original locations in the file system, and between their locations in the BOPT partition. It also maintains dirty information, so when the module is removed, all the dirty blocks are copied back to the file system locations. So let's look at the architecture for Borg. As I said before, it's another layer in the storage stack at the block layer. It consists of user space components and kernel space components. So the kernel space components are the I/O profiler, the BOPT space reconfigurator, and the I/O indirector. The user space components are the analyzer and the planner. When the Borg module is inserted, it begins profiling the I/O activity of the workload. And once a reconfiguration is triggered, the analyzer collects the strays from the I/O profiler. It finds the most popular block access patterns and gives this as an output to the planner. The planner uses this information to create a new layout. The reconfigurator uses this plan and does the actual copying of the data. And finally, the indirector, it redirects any new requests that come into the system to the new partition if a mapping exists in the Borg map that I explained before. The I/O profiler and the indirector are continuous components, so they are continuously operating in the background. And the analyzer, planner, and the space reconfigurator components are triggered only when the reconfiguration is triggered. Analyzer and planner are memory-intensive operations, and they occur in the background, so they have a minimal impact on the foreground activity. Let's look at each of these components in a little more detail. First, the I/O profiler collects activity about the temporal attributes of the workload, the process level attributes, that's the process ID and the name of the process, and the block level attributes, that is the blocks that were accessed and the length of the blocks that were accessed, and the type of operation, whether it was a read or a write operation. Next, it passes this information to the analyzer. The analyzer uses this information to create a graph for every process in the trace. It creates a weighted directed graph. The direction represents the temporal locality between the two nodes, where each node is an LBA range. And the weights on the graph represent the frequency of the accesses. Of all these process access graphs are then merged into a single master graph, which is the input to the planner component. The planner component uses this graph to create a get a new layout. So as you can see, it first picks the most connected node out of this graph. So in this example, it would first pick C because it is most connected, meaning it has the highest number of edge weights on all of its edges. It first picks C, then it picks the next node that is adjacent to C, but which has the highest edge weight on it. In this case, it would pick B because it has the highest edge weight of 10. And since the direction is from C to B, it places B after C. And next node it picks to place is the one that has the highest edge weight connecting to this group of B and C. In this case, that is G. The edge weight here is 9, and because it's on an incoming edge, it places it before the group, that is G, B, and C. In this way, it places all the nodes, it creates a layout for all the nodes in the graph, and passes this new plan to the reconfigurator. The reconfigurator takes this new plan. If there has been a reconfiguration before, there is an existing plan. It also uses this plan and merges these two plans to classify the blocks into different categories. So first, it copies all the leaving blocks, meaning the source. It is copied from the BOPT partition to the FS partitions. That is, these blocks are no longer in the new map. They are no longer frequent, so they have to be removed from the partition. So first it copies all these blocks back to the file system space if they are dirty. Next, it copies the relocate blocks, that is the blocks which have to be relocated within the BOPT partition. And finally, it copies the incoming blocks, that is the new blocks that are now hot and need to be copied from the file system space back into the BOPT space. The leaving and the relocate blocks exist only for multiple reconfiguration. For the first reconfiguration, all the blocks are tagged as incoming blocks. There are no relocates or leaving blocks in the first reconfiguration. Once the reconfiguration is completed, the IO indirector is responsible for redirecting the request to the BOPT partition instead of the original locations in the file system. So it uses the Borg map to find if a mapping exists between the block in the file system space and between the block in the BOPT space. If a mapping exists, meaning the block is present in the BOPT, it redirects the request to the BOPT partition. If no mapping exists, it redirects the request to the original location in the file system. This is in the case of reads. In case of writes, if no mapping exists, it would redirect the block to the write buffer in the BOPT partition and creates a new entry, marks it as dirty in the Borg map. So this entire process is iterative. It repeats continuously. After every reconfiguration is triggered, the analyzer collects the traces from the profiler. It creates a new graph, which the planner uses to create a new layout, which the reconfigurator uses to do the actual copying movement of the data. Once the Borg module is removed, all the dirty data is copied back to the original locations in the file system. So, to evaluate Borg, we wanted to answer a few questions of how Borg would do, how effective Borg is, if it really works, if it's really worth all this trouble. What are the overheads? Does it really interfere with the foreground I/O, or does it have acceptable overheads? Borg also may not necessarily be effective for all kinds of workloads. So when does the efficacy of Borg really begins to reduce? And we have different parameters in Borg that can be configured. For instance, the interval, the reconfiguration interval, or the BOPT size, and the size of the write buffer inside the BOPT. So how sensitive is Borg to each of these parameters? So to answer these questions, again, we use the four different workloads, but I'll just be talking about the web server workload here. The metric we used was the total disk busy times. The reason we chose this metric is because apart from improving the positioning times, Borg also improves, it's also expected to improve the degree of merging, and we wanted to focus more on that. We used five different hosts for each of the, for these experiments. Each of them were running the Linux 2.6 kernels, and we experimented with two different file systems, the RiserFS and the ext3. So in the first experiment with the web server, we made a copy of a department web server and played the traces for the entire week. There were about 1.1 million requests with over 255,000 files. We set the BOPT size to 8 gigabytes, which is less than 5% of the entire file system accessed by the web server workload. And we did four reconfigurations that were equally spaced in time. We evaluated Borg with two traces. So we did two different experiments, one with cumulative traces, that is traces from the beginning of the experiment, and other with partial traces, which contain traces only after the next, after the previous reconfiguration. These are the results. So for the first column shown by N1 here in the first phase, as you can see, the performance with the vanilla system and with Borg with the cumulative and partial traces is exactly the same because there is no reconfiguration done yet. After N1, there is a reconfiguration, and then in N2, you can see the reduction in the disk busy times. There is a consistent reduction in the disk busy times for each of these different phases after every reconfiguration, except in N5 in case of cumulative traces only. There is a slight increase in the disk busy time. This is because the workload, there's a drastic change in the workload access pattern after the fourth phase. So overall, for the cumulative traces, Borg reduces the busy times up to 35%, and for partial traces, there was a reduction up to 39%. This graph here shows the reconfiguration phases for the four reconfigurations that we did. And as is expected, Borg shows increased busy times in the reconfiguration phases. This is because it has additional copying overheads of the blocks in addition to the foreground I/O activity. But it should be noted here that the non-reconfiguration phases are much longer. They're about more than a day and a half, whereas the reconfiguration phases just last for a few minutes. We also measured the Borg overhead here. Again, the two columns show the overheads for the cumulative and the partial traces. And the cumulative traces show a linear increase in the overhead. This is because our current implementation of the analyzer and planner is unoptimized. It does not use the results from the previous reconfigurations. It can be further optimized if it were to use the results from previous reconfigurations instead of starting the analyzer and the planning component from scratch each time with the cumulative traces. Next, we go on to the reconfiguration, the sensitivity analysis of the of the different configurable parameters in Borg. So the first parameter is the reconfiguration interval. In this experiment, we varied the interval between 8 hours to 3 days, and we kept the size of the BOPT constant, which was 1 gigabyte, and of which 50% was the write buffer. This diagram shows, this figure shows the reduction in the busy time as a percentage. As you can see, there are two different trends for the different workloads we use here for the developer and the SVN workload. For the SVN, for the SVN workload, as the interval increases, there is a reduction in the disk busy time, and it actually degrades the performance for very large intervals of 3 days there. That is because the SVN is a rapidly changing workload. For the developer workload, as the interval increases, it shows better improvement in performance, and this is because it can better capture the entire I/O activity. We then chose the best reconfiguration interval from the previous experiment, which was 1 day for the web server and 3 days for the, 1 day for the SVN server and 3 days for the developer workload, and used this in the next experiment. Here we varied the BOPT size between 256 megabytes to 8 gigabytes, and again we kept the write buffer to 50%. Here we can see the SVN server, which is shown by the dark columns, does not show much change. That is because the working set is relatively small and the entire working set is accommodated in the OPT, in the BOPT. Whereas in the developer workload, it shows an increase in performance as the size of the BOPT increases. And once all the working set is accommodated in the BOPT, it sort of stabilizes. Then we chose, we again took the best results from the previous experiments and varied the write buffer from 0% to 100%. And here, as we can see, there are different, as the write buffer size increases for the SVN workload, again, it remains more or less the same. Whereas for the developer workload, as the working sets, as the write buffer size increases, because it can capture more I/O activity inside the BOPT, it shows improved performance. So with this, we can conclude that it is also important to configure Borg correctly to get the optimal results from the Borg parameters. So to conclude, Borg improves the I/O sequentiality and restricts the head movement, and that is why it reduces the seek and the rotational delays, because all the I/O activity is restricted to this BOPT partition. For untuned systems where we do not use the right the right configurable parameters, it shows the reduction in busy times up to 50%. If we use the right parameters, it shows reduction up to 80%. And we saw that the Borg overheads were within acceptable limits. There are many directions in which this work can be extended further. We can explore different layout strategies. Right now, we just chose one layout strategy, which just uses a greedy heuristic to pick the most connected nodes. We can also use automated reconfiguration. Right now, the reconfiguration is triggered periodically, but we can use some heuristics based on the OPT hits to reconfigure the, to automate the reconfigurations. Also, we can use iterative algorithms to reconfigure the configurable parameters in Borg automatically based on the observed workload characteristics. So that'll be all. Any questions?
Ethan Miller, UC Santa Cruz. So the question I have is, given that the workload on the web server looked like about 1% busy time, I just actually added up the numbers in the graph, about 8,000 seconds over a 600,000 second week, what would the effect on response time be? Since that seems like a pretty good metric that I would care about as a web server user, whether the disk is fast or not. I don't care if it's busy, I don't care if the disk is busy 8,000 seconds or 5,000 seconds. I care about whether my web requests are faster. Do you have any sense for that?
Yes, we also did measure the response times, mm-hmm. although it's not in the paper or in the presentation. And there was an improvement up to 46 to 50% for the web server as well.
Okay. Would have liked to have seen those numbers in the paper. That would have actually been pretty helpful. Thanks.
Meng Wan Wang from Ample. If the Borg partition is full, do you copy the data bank into the original location?
If the Borg partition, you mean the write buffer partition is full?
Yes.
No, we don't. We copy the data back only during a reconfiguration if the data no longer is popular or if the Borg module is removed. So if the write buffer is full, then we just continue to redirect the writes to the original location in the file system.
So in your performance results, do you is the write buffer full or always not full?
For the sensitivity analysis, the write buffer was full until the entire working set was accommodated. But for the others, for the cumulative traces, so the write buffer, so if there are new writes to the write buffer, well, No, the write buffer was not full for the experiments that we did because we did reconfigurations based on periodic intervals.
Okay.
So it was not full.
Okay, thank you.
Manu Anand, Adobe. I had a couple of questions about the frequency of reconfiguration and the cost associated with it. I believe you touched on the I/O cost. So what about the CPU cost?
Well, these were the CPU overheads that I show here.
Oh, sorry, I believe they were the I/O ones. So anyway, related question was that, will it be possible for you to recall the size of the files used for it, for use for the experiment?
Recall the size
yeah.
of the files?
Hypothetical example is I have this cluster with a whole lot of small size file, and when I say small size, it's less than 5 MB. So will Borg be able to kind of use?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
Yeah. I have a cluster system with a whole lot of small
size. Could you please speak to the microphone so that we can all hear you?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. So I was giving a hypothetical example where I have a clustering system with a whole lot of small sized file. So will Borg be able to scale to that kind of clustering system, or is there, or how do I kind of
Well,
tweak
Borg
it?
Is independent of the size of the files. It just mines the common, the most popular block access patterns. It could
yeah.
be fragments of a file. It doesn't have to be the whole file.
So in your case, it doesn't actually matter whatever is the size
yes.
of the file.
Yes.
All right, thank you.
Ajay Gulati, VMware. Very interesting work, and I think the motivation gets even stronger given the gap between the disk sizes and the disk bandwidth is increasing. I just wanted to comment on one thing. What do you think the performance of a log structured file system in this case would be, especially with a small modification where you not only write the dirty blocks out, but once in a while you really write the blocks that you have in memory out onto the disk? So you are trying to capture the temporal locality in memory onto the disk over time. Do you think that would give any benefits?
Well, it is based on the log structured file system in that it does try to make the writes more sequential.
I think in that case, you just don't have to.
But except that it also optimizes for the read performance, whereas the log structured file systems do not.
Yeah, I guess that's why I was saying that we should make a modification to write even the non-dirty blocks.
Right, it can be. So can you repeat the question, if it can be?
I'm saying, do you think based on your experiments it would make sense to compare with that or to do something like that?
You mean with the modification to the log structured file system?
Yes.
So what modification?
I think we can take it offline, that's fine.
Okay.
Well, thank you. Thanks to the speaker.
Thank you.